For some of you, maybe exercising hospitality is new. For some, you may feel insecure doing it. For others, you've been doing it so long, you just need a shot in the arm. Whatever your purpose for being here, I do pray that the Lord will meet your needs. I always enjoy doing something like this just for the stimulation it is for me. We do want to pray that this time will stimulate us to a new quality of love and openness of sharing our lives with others. We also desire to be hospitable for the right reasons, not because it's expected of us as Christians, not because it's forced on us, but rather to serve others, to glorify God, and to further His kingdom. For some, hospitality is as natural as breathing. There's some handouts right up there on the mantle you all can help yourselves to. For others, it's a practice that we have to acquire. For some, it is most difficult, but for all of us, it is a commandment. All Christians, man and woman, it is a commandment. 1 Peter 4:9 and Titus 1:8. 1 Peter 4:9, we're to offer hospitality to one another. Titus 1:8, the elders. It is in the list of qualifications for the elders. They must be hospitable. Let's just stop and pray for our time. Father, we do pray that you would build into our lives in this hour, that this would be not a futile exercise, but a time of more reflection on you and your commandments to us. And that we can take home application, Lord, that would be beneficial to your kingdom. We pray for the time, Lord, that the material that you would desire to be covered would be. And we pray in your Son's precious name. Amen. Like you, I've been in many different homes. Many different homes on the East Coast and the West Coast, over the seas. I've been in homes the very low economic stratus. I've been in homes with dirt floors where 4 and 5 children slept in one bed. I've been in homes, very, very beautiful homes, where the swimming pool went through the living room into the outside. And I've been into many homes in between. Like you, I've been in homes where there was made up of one person, made up of several in a family, people living together, like a group of single women living together, homes with all sorts of personalities, homes where grandparents and parents and children lived, people of different ages. And like you, I know when I've been in a hospitable home. And none of the things that I've mentioned had anything to do with it. What does determine a hospitable home? I'd like to spend the first half of our time talking about the philosophy and the scriptural motivation for the hospitality ministry, and then the second half, more just the practical how-tos. I gave you 3 papers, and one of them is just a Bible study that you might want to do later on your own, or do it with another woman or man or couple. And the other is our outline that we'll be going through today. What is hospitality? Let's define it. What it is and what it is not. In the dictionary, hospitality comes between hospice and hospital. A hospice is a shelter. It's a place to go to get away from the everything, the weather, whatever. It's a shelter. And hospital is a place of healing. And that's what we think of when we want what our homes to be when we think of hospitality. A shelter, a place of healing. a place where hearts are opened, where we are uplifted and encouraged, where they've gladly shared what they've had. One of the ways I can always measure if I've been in a hospitable home is there's this reluctance to leave. Last night we were with the Jernigans who've just moved here. He's going to be Terry Taylor's assistant. I did not want to go. This morning we went over to the Imes for breakfast. I did not want to go. a reluctance to leave. The home welcomes you. Hospitality is not what we have, but who we are. It's this attitude and this atmosphere that we set, and we're going to talk about that more. I think of an interesting contrast. I've never forgotten this. Many years ago, Don was speaking in a church in Macon, Georgia. And so we were going to spend, we went down Saturday night, we were spend all day Sunday. And we were in two beautiful Christian homes. The contrast was very interesting. The first home was beautiful on the country club course. They were very gracious to us, very lovely. Took us to the club for lunch. And then took us around to see some of the people in town or whatever. And then they took us over to another couple's home. This couple lived in a very modest home. And we drive in the driveway, and both of them are out the door and into the car. And, we've been waiting for you to get here. And they take us into the back door, sit us down at the kitchen table, and feed us soup. And there was such a contrast, and yet both of them were so warm and so extending to us. And it was a wonderful lesson that I hope I'll never forget. Over the years, with as many instances of having people in our homes as we've had, sometimes I've had to go to the Lord with the motive for hospitality. Walt Henriksen says, I wonder if I've ever had a right motive. And probably a lot of us can identify with that. What am I expected to do, and what do I desire to do to please God and all? Karen Maines, in her book that's listed in your bibliography, Open Heart, Open Home, was a real challenge to me in my thinking and my motives. She identifies the difference between entertainment and hospitality. Entertainment has little to do with real hospitality. It's a source of human pride. Demanding perfection. It's an urge to impress rather than to serve. To put things before people. A fear of people seeing our humanness. The worn sofa, the burnt casserole, whatever. And the reason so many of us do not practice hospitality is because we have it mixed up. We're trying to entertain. And when that happens, then we have to take into consideration, well, my house isn't clean, and I don't have enough dishes that match, and I don't have enough money to buy a special meal. I'm not a gourmet cook. The living room drapes are all over the floor where I'm re-hemming them. And so forth. And it's a good test for ourselves and our motives to think about this. Ask yourself the question about if you're entertaining or if you're ministering with hospitality. Am I nervous? Am I fussing? In the article I gave you from a husband's point of view, he talks about how they can depend on having an argument right before company comes. And I could identify with that, too. You didn't pick up the ice cream? I didn't think I was supposed to pick up. Yes, you were supposed to, you know, that thing. You said you were going to finish in time to get here to do. Another test to determine the difference in entertainment and hospitality. Entertainment looks for a payment a compliment, a return invitation. Are you keeping track how many times you've had them over and they haven't invited you? Esteem for ourselves. Hospitality, on the other hand, is the God-given ministry of no thought of reward. The joy is in giving. Hospitality, then, is serving with our eyes off ourselves and on the other person. Not what does this make me look like, but how can I minister to this person with love and encouragement. There's no false pretenses. We're transparent before them. We see them in our humble esteem, our humble self as we serve. That's when people start relaxing. Hospitality is being missionaries without ever leaving your door. Why be hospitable? Is it scriptural? Well, the word hospital is in the Bible about four or five times, and it's alluded to from Genesis on. It is listed, is mentioned in 1 Timothy 3:2, Titus 1:8, and both of those are the requirement for the elder. 1 Peter 4:9, no, that's the other one, isn't it? Hebrews 13:2, and Romans 12:13. But in Genesis, Abraham is being hospitable. I almost said entertained. Abraham is ministering with hospitality, angels unaware. And King Melchizedek ministered to him with hospitality. It's in Judges 13, 1 Kings 4, Esther talks about it, Leviticus talks about it, 2 Kings, Romans, the Acts, one of my favorite verses is in Acts, where they ministered and shared all that they had. It's in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Why do we serve? Well, God commands it. It's in the scriptures for us there. The examples are there before us. And then there's some other reasons I wanted to communicate. It's vital to fellowship. There is something about extending ourselves and our possessions in our home that is a key ingredient in fellowship. And it's encouraging one another. It's such an encouragement to be included into a home and in their environment. It meets needs. It meets fun needs. It meets, it's a break. It's a contrast. It's a shelter. It's a shelter away from our home. It's a refuge from problems, from loneliness. And it's a mutually beneficial. The receivee and receiver both are very much blessed from it. And I think about for our children's sake, I wish that we, when we had started off 29 years ago in our marriage, we'd started keeping a guest book of all the people that have been in our home. The privilege our children have had of people from all over the United States, from all different nationalities. I mean, they've had the comics, Sunday comics read to them with so many different ethnic accents and national accents. I hope someday they realize the privilege they've had of the people that have walked through our home. It's an outlet for creativity. It's a very fulfilling way to use our talents to serve and minister to others. And it does set an example. We are setting an example for that world out there by opening our doors. The world now is open the garage door opener thing and drive in the garage and close it and go into the home and never even see each other. And we have just moved into a new home, and our neighbors have already commented on our the cars in front of our house. And we want them to see that. We want them to see that our home has an open door. I always like to tell about when we lived in Georgia and the children were so small, and our backyard was the yard with no grass because the kids played football and all the games back there, and Don Lanier was right in the middle of them. And when we'd get a knock at the back door, it'd be, "Can Mr. Lanier come out and play?" And I love it. Don was traveling 50% and 60% of the time, and yet the children knew that our home was the home that they could come. And I had pictures of him playing football with 10 kids hanging on him and him still not giving up that football. You know, the example that it was to the neighbors through those children, we became friends and had a testimony and with the parents. And we had our next-door neighbor who I really felt like I was not doing my part in communicating with her, my Christian walk. But she, you never know how they're watching. And she would say, I've watched the way you discipline the children, you and Don, and or I see the way he plays with the children. He said, I want to find out where you get all that information. Oh, well, we just happen to have this book right here. I'll go to him. So wonderful open doors that way. Devoting themselves for ministry to the saints, 1 Corinthians 16, 14, 15. Ministering to the saints. When are we to be hospitable? Well, we've already alluded to the fact that it's wrong to think it's when the chair is reupholstered and the baby's a little older and when I can afford to cook the way I want to cook for company and when the children are better behaved at meal times, when I know them better. I don't know these people. If we wait for everything to be perfect in our lives, we'll never have people in our homes. And we've probably already missed some opportunities to serve and minister because of some of these types of reasons, or even just insecurity or shyness. If this is one of your struggles, just ask yourself if you've ever known anyone who has been offended because you invited them into your home. I don't know why we shy away from it. I just don't think you can offend someone by inviting them into your home. We may have missed an opportunity of opening our home to someone who will never, ever, ever have another opportunity to be in a Christian home. That is more and more around. That's hard to believe. So we're to be hospitable when we're prepared and when we're unprepared. Sometimes when we're tired. Sometimes when we really don't feel like serving. Sometimes when you feel like it, sometimes when you don't. When we can afford it and when we can't afford it. When you're prepared, when you're unprepared. We're to be hospitable when we're not at home. There's someone sitting in this room whose home is used more when she's gone than when she's at home. Her home isn't very much used for hospitality when she's not even there. Practicing hospitality is costly. Francis Schaeffer shares the great cost in opening Le Brie to people. He talks about how all their wedding gifts were broken and destroyed. Linens were worn out. People threw up all over their furniture and their carpet. Women with venereal disease slept on their sheets, and etc. There is a cost. Mary and Martha opened their home for hospitality. They extended their home to a group of men. They were willing to be known, to be friends with a man who was rejected by many. Jesus and his entourage would come into Bethany. late in the evening. They couldn't call ahead, warn them they were coming. No phones. Come in weary, dusty. Come and sit in on their furniture with all the dust of the road on them. And Mary and Martha didn't have a freezer to go to and pick out that casserole that they always save for a company. And they had to kind of scrounge around to find sleeping places for 13 men. And they didn't have any market right there, so they had to travel 2 miles over into Jerusalem to get food and carry it back on donkey or on their back. It was inconvenient, and it was a sacrifice, but it was a very important ministry, important enough that it is there in the Bible for us. Another one of my favorite illustrations in the scriptures is in Mark 2, when Jesus is in the home ministering in Capernaum, and the house is packed with people. And these friends have a friend who is paralytic, and they want Jesus to heal him. And the friends bring him to the home, and they can't even get in the door. There are so many people there. I share this under friendship, too, because these are friends. They don't turn around and go home. They go up on the roof. They are tenacious. They dig a hole in the roof. They lower this friend down to Jesus, and Jesus heals this man. And don't you know they all walked away rejoicing and excited, and look what Jesus has done, and what a tremendous ministry. Well, who's left with the hole in the roof? There is a cost to opening your home. You may have a hole in your roof. In the daily walk, I copied this some time ago from Ephesians 2:8-9. On the daily walk, it just has the little sayings. It says, salvation in Jesus Christ is free, but following Jesus Christ is costly. It means rearranged priorities, goals, desires. It may demand inconvenience and expense. It costs your time and your finances, wear and tear on the home. When we were still living in California, we bought a townhouse. And we hadn't moved in yet, and we were coming back from Texas to California. And Elaine's looking out the window thinking about that nice new townhouse. Well, we had had a ministry with single professionals, and we started with six, and now we had 60. And Elaine's thinking about 60 people in that new townhouse, and I say to Don, so godly, you know, the ministry's just great. Don't you think it'd be better if we were in a more central location? Oh, no, I think our home's fine. Well, don't you think if we had more room, then we could expand better? No, I think this is great just to have them in the home. I think they like to be in the home. What was Elaine thinking about? White carpet and 60 people in there every week. Well, the Lord gently rebuked me and forgave me of my selfishness. And we had the 60 that became 80, and then we did have to move out. It did get too tight in a townhouse. It costs in your marriage relationship sometime. It's one less night where the two of you are just together. There's no time for the communication, possibly, that you would have intended. If you're single, it could be possibly the people you're living with or whatever. Your relationship is tested and stretched in these difficult situations, like I shared a while ago, when who was supposed to bring home the ice cream. And when we feel like it or not, that certainly does test our attitude, doesn't it? I strongly believe that the whole key to whether we exercise hospitality or not is wrapped up in attitudes, in our ability to adjust with our attitudes. Oh, I've lost my place. Well, I was going to share a little poem. I find it after a while. Let's talk a little bit about a few attitudes that can come up with hospitality. Self-image. I can't do it. It's not me. It's not my thing. I'm shy. Then start easy. Start simple, but start. You are commanded to be hospitable. If your self-image is your struggle, I love Helene Asker's quote one time when she was talking about self-image. She said, concentrate. We are to concentrate not on who we are, but whose we are. That is where the power is. When we think of who we belong to, the power that we can have through Jesus, putting God's love into action, trusting Him for confidence, loving sacrificially as He did, taking our eyes off of ourself and concentrating on the other person. Another attitude we deal with is comparison. We all know that comparison is wrong. If we look at someone else as better, it's wrong. If we look at someone else as less, it's wrong. Comparison is wrong. They may be different, but they are not wrong. We are not wrong. Their home is so much nicer. They have so much more room. They have so much more money with which to be hospitable, so forth. It is wrong. We are not to compare. Positive and negative attitudes can come up. And what I wanted to say on that is flexibility. Let me say the attitude of flexibility. How do you flex? How do you give and take? And we had some people that we were involved with, and I was struggling so with the relationship because they seemed so inflexible, and I identified it to them like this. I said, it's like I drink my coffee black and you drink yours with cream and sugar, so you're saying I'm wrong. It was not bending and being tolerant and understanding differences of people. Flexibility comes out in circumstances. We're going over to some friend's house and there's this electrical storm and all the electricity all over the city is out. We knock on the door and they come to the door laughing with a candle. Isn't this funny? What? This is going to be a creative night, isn't it? We're either going to figure this out or go hungry. So the chuck roast that she had put in the oven that was sitting there raw, we cut up and we fondued. And we had candles all over, you know, and a tossed salad. You don't know for sure what's in it when you do it in the dark, but it's close enough. You invite people for a picnic and it's storming outside. So what do you do? Do you say, oh, I'm sorry, please don't come, the weather's bad? Or do you say, come on over, the picnic's on. You put the blanket on the floor in the living room and you put some play like ants around and you have the picnic in the floor. You're flexible. You give. You take. You have a cake that is sitting in the oven raw. What did I put too much of or not enough of? So you tell everybody, I have a secret recipe. This pudding is so different. You will love it. If you like it enough, I'll give you the recipe, you know. So an attitude of sensitivity. You have some friends who are acquaintances or new, whatever. Very poor. Very, very poor. And you are going to be a good Christian and minister to the poor and feed the poor. So you ask them over to your home. And you set out your silver and your crystal and you feed them steak. Is that sensitive? Jeannie Hill in the Reader's Digest shares a story about her father who was so strict in teaching the family, the children, manners. I mean, they towed the line at that table. Manners were the thing. Well, he hired a 16-year-old boy to help him dig a cellar. And the boy was there at dinner time, so the father included him in the meal that evening. He was from the Ozark Hills, and he sat down at the table, you know, and wiped his hands on his trousers, and he sat down, and he picked up his fork and started eating his green peas. And all the kids, you know, look at each other and roll their eyes and look at Dad.
And Dad just nonchalantly lays down his fork and picks up his knife and starts eating his food with the knife. So the kids could hardly wait till the boy had gone and they could pounce on Dad. Dad, you know, you get on us all the time about manners. What were you doing? His response was this: good manners are nothing more than making the other person feel at ease. Good manners are nothing more than making the other person feel at ease. Another attitude that we really want to reflect on in the area of hospitality is just an attitude of serving, expecting nothing in return. Don has 5 or 6 of the men coming home for 4 and 5 days at a time, and I'm going to cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner and serve these men coffee breaks. And I'm so delighted because I am going to get to express my gift of hospitality and servantship. Well, about the middle of the third day, when nobody has told me how wonderful I am, somehow all my serving attitude dissipates. It has been very good for me to be tested and challenged on why am I really doing this? Why? Because that guy always pushes all the mushrooms out of his food and leaves it on, you know, why is that bothering you, Elaine? Why? Because your husband didn't tell you you're wonderful, marvelous. You know, why? Why is that bothering you? And I have to get before the Lord again that being in the kitchen and cooking and cleaning is ministering to the people and is being as important of a ministry as while those men are in the other room on their knees praying and making decisions about people's lives for the mission field. Those clean dishes are as important. I must focus on God. I have to be joyful in whatever we do, Proverbs 17:22. I must do as in Philippians, putting others before self. Where? Where are we to be hospitable? Let's not have tunnel vision that hospitality means when I open my front door or my back door. It can be on the phone. It can be in our car. It can be taking someone, the retired man next door, with you when you go to the concert or whatever. It can be a tour guide for people in town. It can be in your church. When we joined a new church, it was such an example of hospitality, this one couple who immediately latched on to us. Show us around the church where the different classes are. This, now come with us to our class. Now let us take you out for a sandwich afterwards. Now come over to our house after church this week. They practiced hospitality right there in the church. If you have a boat or a cabin or something to share with people, that is you can practice hospitality by giving and sharing. You can practice hospitality on the picnic grounds. In fact, this is a wonderful opportunity to, like after church, to invite another couple with children maybe to go on a picnic, and it's an economical meal to fix, and the kids can run crazy, you know, all over the park, and then after a while you can say goodbye and go home, and they can stay as long as they want, but that you can control the situation. It's a wonderful opportunity to practice hospitality at the park. Who are we to be hospitable to? In the Christian environment, as has been alluded to, I'm sure, from many messages to you and all, is that we tend to be confined sometimes on who we are willing to open our homes to. And I would like for us all to be challenged by Christ and who we really should open our homes and hearts to. The poor, the sick, the lost pagan world. And when we get involved with people, it takes time, it stretches our horizons, and it takes energy even to be involved in the non-Christian world. It takes prayer protection. Don and I it being full-time in the ministry, really, really have to work at making and developing non-Christian friends. Oh, goodness, that would be difficult, wouldn't it? They all sound alike sometimes to me when I sing them. That's a good idea. I think I'll get to that later. And think about what are your strengths. Major and capitalize on your strengths. If you're a great cook, you fix that fantastic meal and let someone else play the piano or the harp or whatever. If you are a lousy cook, you have everybody else bring dessert and you read your poetry to them. You know, whatever you feel like you want to do. Do not let money stop you. How much does popcorn cost? You know, ask your neighbors over to watch the football game and eat popcorn. You tell them ahead of time, come on over for a football game and popcorn. Therefore, they're not anticipating a fancy buffet. They're not anticipating a meal. They're anticipating popcorn. Learn from others. If you feel like there are areas of weakness for you there, areas you want to develop more or redirect, learn from others. Watch, and when you're in other homes, what makes this so appealing? Why is everybody covered in her kitchen? And I'm sure all of us have that experience. It doesn't matter how big your kitchen is, everybody's in the kitchen. And, be observant. Why does her table look so pretty? I mean, this food, I feed my family's food all the time. Why does this look so special? What was that delicious recipe? I think it's a compliment for people to ask you for a recipe, and sometimes we shy away from doing that. Learn and glean from each other. In Karen Main's book, she gives a lot of good ideas on shortcuts. Some of them I would put into my lifestyle, some I would not. So, you know, everybody chooses for themselves. Her theme definitely is you do not clean up for a great big group, because then you just have it all to do over again afterwards. And for me, I have to really work at not being an I'll do it person. If I had my way, my children are now 21, 25, I'd probably still be making their beds for them. If my husband, when they were 4 and 5, hadn't started teaching them how to make their beds, because I'll just do it. You know, it's just easier. And I want to learn how more to have people participate more with me. And some people love to. Some people would rather sit at your table and leave and not help. And other people feel uncomfortable doing that. Again, flexing for them. Learning Sidetracked Home Executives is a really good book on helping you keep up with all those big chores so that, you know, you're having, I don't want to have them over after Sunday church because, or, you know, Saturday night, because that means Friday and Saturday I'm going to be cleaning all day. Well, you know, because the Jell-O's dripping down from the refrigerator and the little fingerprints are on the windows and so forth. But if you are organized and orderly in your lifestyle, then those things are kept up so that it isn't this major, humongous task instead of a joy for you. I do mention that. That's the next point, in fact. In Gail McDonald's book, she talks about how they decide when they went to a new pastorate, they decide they wanted to have everyone in the church in their home. So they bunched them into 30 and 40 people, and it took them, I think, 13 weeks every Thursday night to have everyone in their home. They borrowed fondue pots. They did the same menu, the same schedule, the same games for 13 weeks. Now, for them, that might have gotten a little old, but the company doesn't know that. They're having a ball. I do like to practice having two parties back-to-back. Maybe you'd like to have, you know, the whole Bible study group over or your Sunday school class over, and then you have all these non-Christians you've been wanting to have over. So maybe, you know, you'll have two parties back to back so that you make the dessert one time and you buy the fresh flowers one time and you set the table with the linens. Well, sometimes you get away with it, only setting the linens one time. I don't mean napkins. With small children and you're having dinner guests and you want to have a really interesting time with them, you know, sometimes it's great to have them see the children, be involved in your family relationship, but sometimes you want to just have a nice adult conversation. And one of the things we used to do with our children when they were little is I would say, now, we're having the Smiths over tonight for dinner. And now, do you want to eat the table with us? Oh, no. Or do you want to eat in front of TV? You know, well, of course, they want to eat in front of TV. So they've made the choice. They don't feel like we've booted them away from the table. And it's a treat for them and a treat for us to have this adult conversation. Well, I'm going to not do all these other little shortcuts I have. One thought I had is that when you're having out-of-town company to do a lot of your cooking at one time. My sister, she barbecues a ham and a chicken and sausage and brisket all at one time and puts it in her freezer, and then we never cook again the whole time we're there. We come in from sightseeing, you know, and it's all cooked and ready, and the breads are already cooked and so forth. Learning how to organize your time and keep files. And if you have a lot of people in your home, it's always good to write on your calendar what you fed them so that you don't feed them the same thing three times in a row. Being sensitive maybe to send a map to your home so that they're not wandering all over. Let me just give some ideas on overnight guests and then we'll close. These are just lots of different ideas that we've picked up, that we've tried to implement, that we've appreciated with our travels. If you're blessed to have a guest room, that is fantastic, because you can do a lot of this, set it up ahead of time, and, you know, it's there. But if not, then you choose what's going to be the spot that you're going to use. And think about how far it is from the bathroom. How far they would have to go in the middle of night not knowing where they are, where they don't end up in the wrong bed, which has happened before. I'm not going to name names. Let me stress clean sheets. Now, I don't know if you're tempted like me, but when we have four different sets of company in a week's time and they've just been there one night, you know, I think, is that sheet really dirty? Do I really have to strip that bed again and wash those sheets again and put them back on that bed again? Please do. Please remember, emphasize clean sheets. Think about yourself, you know, how you feel, to know they've made that effort, that they care enough to put you on those clean sheets. An extra blanket. We carry night lights just because with all of our travels and being in so many different homes, we just depend on nightlight. They're very inexpensive, and they're very inexpensive to run, if that's what you call it. Have one in your hallway and your bathroom for the guest. Something I appreciate, because I'm a night reader, is a lamp by the bed. Don does not read when he goes to bed. Therefore, when I have this big bright light shining down, I feel guilty, you know, because I can't read because it's bright. So just a thought, I carry around this little light now that you clip on your book for that reason. But it's something that I've wanted to do in my home, is to have lamps by the bed. Plastic hangers, be sure there's hangers for them. And sometimes a nice way to have to separate out their towels, or maybe if your children are sharing the bathroom or whatever with them, is to put their towels on hangers that they can take in their own bedroom. Identify which towels are theirs. I've stood in bathrooms before and thought, what am I supposed to do? Use these gorgeous ones that are there, you know, or what? It's nice to have that basket of goodies, just a little gum and just a couple of pieces of fruit maybe and a little package of nuts. Some people that come in our homes, they may be on an entirely different, their stomachs may be on an entirely different time schedule. I've had people in my home that I've found out later, you know, we're not, it, because it was 8 o'clock to us, I assumed they had had dinner, and they did not have dinner, and I've sent them to bed hungry, you know. So just having that little basket in there, and the next morning when you go in and everything's devoured, you know. An emergency basket is wonderful, too. I don't know how many of you have this or you've been in homes where they have this, but it's wonderful for your overnight guests when there's that little basket with safety pins and dental floss or Band-Aid or cough drops or aspirin. And now with these all these little sample sizes, you know, I've got Howard Johnson's shower cap and shampoo in mine. Show them where the thermostat is, and if it's too warm, how to open the windows, which sometimes we've not been able to do, and how to make the fan faster or slower. One thing I'm shopping for right now for our guest bedroom is an alarm clock. You know, most people have it with them, but that's just a nice little special touch. Somewhere to put their luggage is always nice. If you have a luggage rack or a nice touch to have. One thing that I think is a priority is having hard and soft pillows. Don and I like different kinds of pillows, and so then I assume that different people that come in our home have a preference also. So one year with my birthday money, I went out and bought two hard pillows and two firm pillows and two soft pillows, and threatened the children with their life if they used them, and saved them especially for company. Now, for some of us, that may seem extravagant, but that was what I chose to do with my birthday money. That made me more comfortable to know that I could give guests that choice. And a mirror. Be sure there's a mirror available to them. Full length, if possible, is very nice when they're in unfamiliar place and so forth. A window shade. Some woman shared with me, she says, I don't know how many times I've had to stay in a room where I could not filter out the light, and how difficult it was, maybe because of a different time schedule, how difficult it was for me to sleep. And that was something that was a new thought for me. Give your guests some freedom to be alone. Give them that time. Don't think you have to be entertaining them every minute, but give them that time to exercise maybe, or to have that quiet time. And the other thing that we do is we ask people if they're breakfast eaters. For you to go to a lot of trouble and expense and effort to make this beautiful breakfast when they don't even like the smell or look of food before 10:30 in the morning, you know, is not necessary. So I just always ask, are you breakfast eaters, and how big, and how do you like your coffee, and the coffee's going to be on ready for you, and so forth. Well, that's a lot of information, and I'm sorry our time is up for you. But I would just like to encourage you on balance. You know you learn your capacities. You know your gifts and abilities. You know where you need to stretch yourself. You know where God is going to have to use His power in you. We know that if we do any of this with our own pat on the back, that it is going to be worthless in furthering His kingdom. We know that hospitality is just a part of the ministry, and it's keeping that in balance, and knowing that God will honor your attitude in your heart to serve. Whatever you do, do it with joy and with love as unto the Lord. Who knows, the next person you shower with love and hospitality just might be that angel. Let's pray. Father, how grateful we are that you even taught us that if we would knock on the door, you would open it to us. And we pray that as we meditate over some of these thoughts, that you might touch us where you would like to see us. Change in attitude, or be a little more bold, where we would deal with pride, where we could use some of your creative resources. We do pray, Lord, that this time will be used for your glory. In your Son's precious name, amen.